You know what was on the jukebox in the front. Now Matt the Cat's gonna show you what was on the juke in the back.
Mercy, I'm Matt the Cat, and I'm back on your scene with my 78 RPM record machine. The jukebox is on and the tubes are hot, so now it's time for me to give you what I got. Another solid hour of 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues you can use from the top of your head to the soles on your worn-out walking shoes. This is the soul that came before rock and roll on the juke in the back. For the last 2 weeks, we've been taking a look at record man George Goldner. He had a golden ear. He knew what the teenagers wanted to hear, and he put it out. Most of it was raw, young groups, right off the streets and onto the wax and into your eardrums. You know, we ask the question all the time, what was the first rock and roll record? We go back to the 1940s. Was it Cadillac Boogie or Good Rockin' Tonight or Rocket 88? 60 Minute Man, Shaboom, G, it doesn't really matter. Because isn't it more important what got the music going? What sustained rock and roll? What put rock and roll into the mainstream? George Goldner had a huge role in that. If you think about the records he was releasing, how popular they became, like Why Do Fools Fall in Love? G, Little Girl of Mine, Could This Be Magic? Maybe, Tears on My Pillow. These were songs that sustained rock and roll. They kept it going. And that's why I've allotted 3 programs to record man George Goldner. He was the backbone of all of this. But he also was a degenerate gambler. Nobody's perfect, right? And that gambling got him in trouble with loan sharks and mobsters and such. Enter Joel Kolsky, who worked with Morris Levy, the alleged mobster. Goldner had started Tico Records in 1948, Rama Records in 1953, G Records in early 54. By mid-1955, he was in such money trouble that he sold 50% of all 3 of those labels. But he was still cranking out the hits, and by April of 57, he was so in debt, he sold the other 50% of all of those labels. So here we are in 1957, and the great record man with the golden ear no longer has any record labels of his own. So he goes about starting Gone Records and End Records, taking 2 terms in popular beatnik culture. You know, like, hey man, that's really gone, and yeah, baby, it's the living end. Thus the names of his 2 new record labels. This week on part 3 of our George Goldner feature, we're going to look at those 2 record labels, Gone and End. And I've decided to split it up where we'll do half the show on Gone, and then we'll finish up the show with End Records. So, are you ready to get gone, baby? He began Gone Records in mid-1957 and used the numbering system 500. So 5001, the very first Gone release, was by rockabilly singer Jimmy Stone. We'll begin our look at Gone Records with 5002 by a group from Harlem, the Dubs. They came out of the combining of 2 groups, the Five Wings and the Scale Tones. Richard Blandon was the lead singer, and he wrote this tune, which was released on Johnson Records. You see, Hiram Johnson was the manager of the group, and he set up this little label to promote the Dubs. Well, Johnson Records couldn't handle distribution, so George Goldner picked it up, and he released it in April of 57 as the second Gone release. Don't Ask Me to Be Lonely was on the charts for 4 weeks and rose to the pop position of 72. It never entered the rhythm and blues charts, but it's going to kick off this week's Juke in the Back. Richard Blandon singing lead, he wrote it. Here are the Dubs. Don't Ask Me to Be Lonely. Don't
ask me for the world. It doesn't seem much. Ask me for the moon, dear. And I'll reach out to touch anything for you, dear only. But please don't ask me to be lonely. Ask me for the stars, dear, and I'll fulfill your demand. Ask me for the diamond, I'll put them on your hand. Anything for you, dear only. But please don't ask me to be lonely.
This world is all my friend. Looking for a girl such as you,
I
gave up my sex.
Where
will I look into?
The diamond, I'll put them on your hand. Anything for you, dear only. But please don't ask me to be lonely.
Don't ask me to be lonely.
One smile, one touch.
One you almost never hear, Is It a Dream, by a group from Queens, the Premiers. Now don't get them mixed up with all the other groups who called themselves the Premiers. Remember, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers' original name was the Premiers. And then there's the 60s Premiers that did Farmer John. Nope, this was a one-off group from Queens. As far as I can tell, this was their only release on any label. It was gone. 5009. Is It a Dream? Fantabulous record. And now the Dubs return with number 5011, released in August of 57. Could This Be Magic? Their biggest career hit. It went to number 23 on the pop charts. But just like Don't Ask Me to Be Lonely, it did not enter the rhythm and blues lists. In fact, the Dubs never had a national R&B hit. This was one they could really hang their hat on, though. The Dubs, with the immortal Could This Be Magic on the Juke in the Back.
Oh,
The Channels, Earl Lewis and the Boys from Harlem, New York, and That's My Desire. That tune was really made popular in 1946 when Frankie Lane recorded it. Hatta Brooks did a version in 47, but you know, it was the Channels that really brought it into the vocal group rock and roll era, where it became a vocal group standard, later recorded by the Flamingos, Dion and the Belmonts. Even James Brown and Buddy Holly had a shot at it. By the time this record came out in late 1957, the Channels had already made a name for themselves around New York. They had recorded a couple of sides for the Whirlin' Disc label, like the classics The Closer You Are and The Gleam in Your Eye. They would have two releases on Gone before moving over to Bobby Robinson's labels Fire and Fury. The Channels, one of the all-time classic vocal groups. I wanted to point out something that I noticed while researching this show and looking at a bunch of Gone and End 78s. George Goldner's name is missing from writing credit on most of these sides. It seems like that payola practice of putting your name as a writer in order to get publishing royalties may have stopped around this time, 1957. He didn't write this next one, but he did arrange it. It's an instrumental by the session band that they were calling the Gone All-Stars. Saxophonist Buddy Lucas is leading the band and solos throughout this record. It's their laid-back take on the Perez Prado song, Mambo No. 5. Now, Buddy Lucas had been around since 52 with his group, The Band of Tomorrow, and he was even a session man and played on Little Willie John's Fever before coming to Goldner to be a part of the Gone All-Stars. This was released at the end of 57, and by February of 58, it hit number 30. Here are the Gone All-Stars featuring Buddy Lucas with 7-Eleven, Mambo No. 5. Generous support for Juke in the Back provided by weekly sustainers Janice Stenhouse, Robert Stallworth, Barry from San Diego,
Mr. Lee, Joe Metzger, Bernie Rossman, Barry from Riverside, Arnold and Linda Rosenberg, Ken Farger, Gail Kuntz, Mark and Marion McAlpine, Glenn Dicker, Michael Carter, and contributors Gary Cipollone, Pamela Isabel, Michael Carey, Carmine Mastrogiovanni. Thank you for your support. More information at jukeintheback.org.
I'm Bobby the Bobcat, you're where it's at, and I'm digging the Juke in the Back.
I wanna know. I wanna know. Yeah. Baby, will you be mine? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Isley Brothers, very, very early Isley Brothers, recording for Gone Records in 1958. They were from Cincinnati, but moved to New York City to get discovered and to record. In 57, they recorded for Teenage and Mark X Records, which impressed Richie Barrett, who brought them over to Goldner. But Goldner couldn't be convinced. Barrett had to try over and over again to get him to sign the Isley Brothers. And it's a good thing he did, too, because that's a strong song. I Wanna Know, Baby, Will You Be Mine? That should have gone somewhere, but it didn't. The Isley Brothers wouldn't score a hit until Shout for RCA Victor in 59. But man, what a dynamic and versatile group as they survived all the trends of the 60s and 70s, changing their style, adapting, and scoring hit after hit. Man, they were still scoring hits into the 1990s. Incredible. That is where it all began for the Isley Brothers, right here on Gone Records, as we feature George Goldner, the great record man, and his final two independent labels, Gone and N Records. We'll start looking at End Records in just a few minutes, but right now we're still Gone, Daddy, Gone. And up next is another hit-making duo that George Goldner decided to take a chance on after they already had three hits for Chess Records. I'm talking about Johnny and Joe. You know, over the mountain, across the sea, I'll be spinning Johnny and Joe. Well, J&S Records had originally released this, Who Do You Love? Goldner picked up the distribution and reissued it on Gone. Unfortunately, it didn't go anywhere, but maybe it didn't help that he misspelled Johnny's name on the label, spelling it J-O-H-N-N-Y instead of J-O-H-N-N-I-E. Here's Johnny and Joe with the last Gone record that we're going to look at today. From mid-1958, Who Do You Love? on The Juke in the Back with Matt the Cat.
Yeah!
Malcolm Dodds and the Tune Drops. That's right, you heard me correctly. Malcolm Dodds and the Tune Drops. The very first record Goldner issued on End, his second new label of 1957. That was End 1000, and what a fantastic record that is. Malcolm Dodds could sing, man, and Goldner must have felt that he had something because he gave them three chances, three releases on End, but none of them went anywhere. The group was from Brooklyn, and as I've mentioned over and over, these labels really mined local New York talent. These are groups that are from the street corners. They're young, they're rough, they're inexperienced, they don't have legal representation, they're not going to get paid, or they're not going to make more than $5. Now, if you were really successful, you might be able to use a Cadillac, but they'd never give you ownership of the Cadillac. The late great pop singer Jimmy Rogers once told me that Morris Levy would give you a new Cadillac, but he would never give you the title of the car, so he could always revoke your automobile when you stopped having hits. Levy, of course, was the owner of Roulette Records, which George Goldner's labels were folded into when he sold his shares of Tico, Rama, and G in 57. The labels we're featuring this week on The Juke in the Back, Gone and End, would have a similar fate. But let's not talk about that right now. Let's talk about one of the biggest groups that Goldner would ever record. Another one that was brought to him by Ritchie Barrett. These are the Chantels. Often credited as the first rock and roll girl group, of course they weren't. There were girl groups before them, but you could say the Chantels had the largest girl group impact of the late 1950s, pre-Shirelles. The leader, Arlene Smith, had such a great, great, unique sound. As we used to say on my old XM radio show, Arlene is queen. All the girls were from the Bronx, and Ritchie Barrett discovered them while the Chantels were trying to see his group, the Valentines, perform live. He took them to Goldner, and both cats were digging on their sound. They got them in the studio in July of 57 and put out their first record in August. It hit number 71 on the pop chart, but failed to make the rhythm and blues lists. Man, that's becoming kind of a theme on this week's show. And funnily enough, the tune is called He's Gone, but Goldner didn't release it on the Gone label. He put it on the End label. This week's feature on the Juke in the Back. Here are the Chantels with their breakthrough record.
He's gone.
I must have done something.
featured in the 1957 motion picture Jamboree. That's Frankie Lyman's little brother, Louis Lyman, and his group, the Teen Chords. Kind of a takeoff on the Teenagers, Frankie's group. But they weren't as successful as the Teenagers. Still, though, Louis Lyman and the Teen Chords hold a special place in vocal group history as one of the great 1950s kid groups. They recorded a handful of sides for Bobby Robinson's Fury label before coming over to George Goldner on a handshake. They never actually had a real contract. Bobby Robinson had worked really hard to make them the next Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, but it just wasn't working out. So we thought maybe it was a good time to let Goldner have a try at it. The flip side of Your Last Chance was their version of the tune that Nat King Cole made popular years before, Too Young. They were recorded in December of 56 and released in mid-57. We're featuring the Gone and Right Now, the End record label, the last two independent record labels owned by George Goldner during this golden period. The man could pick hits. He knew what he was doing, and you can tell, because remember I mentioned earlier in the program, and he wasn't putting his name as the songwriter on records anymore? Well, he did on this next one, and man, was it a doozy. It's Maybe by the Chantels. Released in December of 57, and by early 58, it was sitting at number 2 on the rhythm and blues lists and number 15 on the pop chart. This wonderful tune would have another life in the early 1970s when Richard Barrett would have another female group, the 3 Degrees, recorded for Roulette Records. Their version would hit number 4 R&B. But right now we're going to hear the original and remember that Arlene is still queen. Here she is singing with the Chantels and Maybe. Now it's time for the Great 78, where we take a thick piece of shellac and harken back to a time when 78 RPM records were king. This week we're featuring Gone and End Records. So let's hear from a group who only had one single for George Goldner's End label. From Port Chester, New York, They are the Uniques, a group originally known as the Five Thrills. Arthur Epps is singing a beautiful lead on this great 78. Here are the Uniques with Tell the Angels.
That's why I must tell it to the ones above, so dearest to me. Even though we're apart, you're part of my heart. That's why I have to say I need you.
You're listening to The Juke in the Back with Matt the Cat.
Walked all day till my feet were tired. I was low, I just couldn't get hired. Saw a sign in a grocery store. Help is light, and we need some more.
I got a job.
Sha-da-da, sha-da-da-da.
Never, never quit my brand new job.
Working all day and I'm working all night.
He says to me, get the boxes, take them to the basement,
and do the job better. I'll get everything.
ladies wash the windows and the doors.
Never, never could my brand new
job. Working all day and working all night.
In my heart, caused by you. Love is not a gadget. Love is not a toy. When you find the one you love, she'll fill your heart with joy. If we could start anew, I wouldn't hesitate. In my heart, caused by you.
You.
Oh.
You.
Oh.
You.
You.
The Imperials, right out of the gate in the fall of 58. Tears on my pillow. A big number two R&B and number four pop record. That was huge for Goldner. Imagine going top 10 pop. Now, little Anthony Gourdin had been around for a while, first singing with the DuPonts and then with the Chesters. The Chesters changed their name to the Imperials and signed with George Goldner. The rest is history. Just incredible, incredible records from them and the group before them. The Miracles. Yes, that's Smokey and the Group with an answer record to the Silhouettes' Get a Job. You know, the Miracles were first known as the Five Chimes when they recorded with Barry Gordy Jr. back in January of 1958. Gordy really couldn't put the record out at this point, so he struck a deal with George Goldner. But soon, in 1959, Barry Gordy Jr. would form Tamla Records, which of course would spawn Motown. Well, as I hinted to earlier in the program, End and Gone Records had the same fate as Tico, Rama, and G. In 1962, Goldner would sell those labels to Morris Levy as well, and he would roll them into his Roulette Records. Goldner had that ear, he could pick the hits, but he just couldn't stop gambling. And so he made a really good mark for the mob. He could be counted on. Give him some money up front, have him start a label, let him do what he does best, then take it away from him when you can't resist gambling. What a horrible disease. In 64, Goldner was down on his luck, having lost his most recent labels, and he ran into songwriters Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, who had started another label of their own, Redbird Records. They were having trouble, feeling like they couldn't pick the hits anymore. So Goldner offered to go through the demos that they had and pick some stuff out. Lieber and Stoller thought, well, that couldn't hurt, until they saw what Goldner picked out. It was a tune that Jerry Lieber absolutely hated, Chapel of Love by the Dixie Cups. Goldner said, no, no, this is going to be a big hit. And sure enough, it topped the American pop and R&B charts. Lieber and Stoller and Redbird Records were back on top, thanks to George Goldner. They cut him in as a partner, and things were going pretty well. They were having hit records with the Shangri-Las and the Ad-Libs, but Lieber and Stoller were getting a little nervous as the loan sharks started to circle their offices. Sensing that this wasn't a situation that they wanted to get into, Lieber and Stoller sold their shares in Redbird Records to Goldner for a dollar. A year later, Goldner sold Redbird Records. In 1970, George Goldner had just started a new label, Firebird Records, right before he had a heart attack and died at the age of only 52 on April 15th, Tax Day. I'm Matt the Cat, and I hope you've enjoyed this three-part look at the iconic record man of early rock and roll, George Goldner. He wasn't the most successful guy in the business, but rock and roll would not have been rock and roll without him. Let's go out with one more from the N label from 1958. It's a group that had already proven themselves on Chance, Parrot, Chess, and Decca, the Flamingos. But they had a new guitarist and singer who was also a stellar songwriter, Terry Johnson. Goldner signed them in September of 1958. On September 26th, they had their first recording session for him, and the first single was issued in October, Lovers Never Say Goodbye. Group members Terry Johnson and Paul Wilson had written the song, and they share lead vocals on it. It hit number 25 R&B and crossed over to number 52 pop. So let's close it with the Flamingos and Lovers Never Say Goodbye. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Please wait for me. For I shall return my love for you will forever burn. Though we must part, just say so long,
so long, darling,
because lovers never say goodbye. I love you, my darling, more than life itself. I wouldn't try to hurt you, for I'd only be hurting myself. Just kiss me, dear, and hold me tight. For this is not our last time. Though we must part, there's no reason to cry. Just say so long,
so long, darling,
because love never say goodbye.
Well, we've run out of whiskey and the women have all gone home. Thanks for dropping by. feel free to let Matt the Cat know if you dug the show. Email him at mattthecat@mattthecat.com. Juke in the Back is recorded at Rosie's Juke Joint, located at the Stepping Stone Inn in Salem, Massachusetts. For more information, please visit jukeintheback.org. I'm Miss Rosie. See you next time on the Juke in the Back.